Neville's worst day. The moment Neville opened his eyes, a broad smile stretched across his face. "This is going to be a great day," he announced happily to Trevor, who was perched on his chest, blinking up at him sleepily. "It is. I'm going to spend the whole afternoon with a beautiful woman who's smart and interesting and nice. And who doesn't make me want to slit my own throat with my pruning shears."
Trevor gave an approving croak to this pronouncement, and Neville got up and started fretting over his wardrobe.
"Somebody needs to tell me what to wear," he thought irritably. "I don't know what she'd like. Wait, I'll ask Elizabeth. She loves picking out clothes."
He hastily scratched out a note and shoved his aggravated and heavy-lidded brown owl through the window.
"Elizabeth gets up early," he complained loudly to Trevor after 5 minutes had passed. "It's taking her so long," Trevor let out a long and scornful croak.
"Oh, yeah, right. She can't operate. Crap! When do I keep forgetting that?"
He stared accusingly at Trevor.
"He'd have to bring her, and he won't. I know he won't. And that owl's going to wake him up, and it's kind of early."
He snatched his silver timepiece up and saw that it was 5:15, and let out a gloomy sigh.
"He's not going to like it," he told Trevor direly. "Just you wait."
30 seconds later, a piece of parchment that was smoking around the edges appeared in the palm of his hand, and Neville blew the edges out quickly and dropped it on the bed.
"Sod off, you great lout. We're trying to sleep here."
Neville sat down angrily and glared at the note.
"Well, thanks for nothing, you stupid crabby prat," he told the smoldering missive. "Okay, so it's 5 a.m. Lots of people get up this early."
Trevor gave him a reproachful glance.
"What? They do. He sucks. And who's going to tell me what to wear?"
Trevor gave him one last irritated look and hopped out of the room, and Neville got up and began pacing about until he happened upon what he thought a most ingenious plan. He would bring a few items of clothing with him, he decided, and let Elizabeth pick out an outfit from them. It was rather difficult to choose which shirts, waistcoats, trousers, robes, and cloaks he should bring, however, and as he kept tossing more items onto the pile on his bed, the springs began creaking ominously. When he staggered up to Lupin's front door, laden with a veritable mountain of garments, he kicked it, since he did not have a free hand to knock.
"Show yourself!" roared the terrifying voice of Kingsley Shacklebolt,
and Neville dropped all the clothes at once and waved his hands wildly in the air.
"It's just me! Neville Longbottom!"
Kingsley opened the door with a look of sheer and utter disgust on his face.
"Longbottom!" he shouted. "What in hell are you doing hiding behind all that clothing? You come here to do your wash now!"
"No," Neville replied sullenly. "Sir," he added quickly when Kingsley gave him a menacing look.
"Well?"
Kingsley remained stationary in the doorway, apparently awaiting further explanation. Neville, who was quite certain he did have an excellent reason, but was too frightened to think of what it was, just looked back at him blankly.
"I don't know," he muttered.
"Get in," Kingsley demanded impatiently and stepped aside. "And don't worry yourself. I'll be leaving shortly. We went to the beach yesterday, and I had a bit too much coconut rum. Spent the night here. I'm on my way to work."
He indicated his black dress robes and tie as if to prove his point, and Neville struggled for a proper response.
"So, you got shit-faced drunk yesterday? That's nice. Did you puke? Why did they go to the beach with you and not me? Not that I care.
Well, hurry up and go to work, then. As in, go now. I'm sure you've tons of people to scare at the ministry today. Might as well get started."
"I can't say any of that," he thought desperately. "What else am I supposed to say?" "Please refrain from your ceaseless chatter," Kingsley told him brusquely, as Neville trailed him mutely into the kitchen. "It's quite maddening."
Neville forgot about Kingsley entirely when he saw Rosie sitting at the kitchen table in a thin blue cotton nightgown with spaghetti straps, yawning and eating an apple.
"Oh, no. No, I can't believe it. First Shacklebolt practically kills me, and now she's here, too? This is a nightmare. Wake up! Wake up!"
"Can't you even wear any clothes?" he blurted out angrily when she gave him a saucy look. "Doesn't anything embarrass you?"
Rosie glanced up at Kingsley with a sad little pout.
"Neville is always so mean to me,"
she told him in a bewildered voice.
"And I don't know why. I'm just sitting here eating this apple."
She took another bite and put on a pitiful expression.
Oh, you did not. You just did not. "Longbottom," Kingsley boomed and the glass window pane rattled. "What the hell is wrong with you? Apologize to this young lady,"
he snarled. Okay, I gotta choose here. Apologize to Rosie or die. I don't know which is worse. I wonder if he'll kill me quick.
"I am not accustomed to being ignored,"
Kingsley said in a deathly tone.
"You could shrink him,"
Rosie suggested cheerfully as she took another bite of the apple.
"Sorry," Neville spat out unremorsefully.
"Sorry."
"Thank you,"
Rosie replied in a sickeningly sweet voice.
That was really nice of you to stick up for me, Kingsley.
Kingsley gave Rosie a fond look, and Neville sat down at the table in fury. I hate her. I hate her. He thinks I'm stupid anyway. Now he thinks I'm stupid and mean. I hate her. I loathe her. I despise her. I'm going to find John Lupin and ask him for more adjectives to describe just how much I hate her. Teddy trotted happily through the doorway, his hair a cheerful yellow, and climbed up on the bench next to Rosie.
Hello, Neville,
he beamed.
Why are all your clothes out in the hall?
Never mind, Neville mumbled sulkily.
Your clothes are all in the hall,
Rosie said in a genuinely bewildered tone.
What, you're moving in here? Why?
I asked him the same thing. Apparently the subject is simply too dreadful for him to discuss, Kingsley told her gravely as Lupin stalked into the room behind Teddy. Oh, brilliant. Now he's up. Go back to bed, you stupid, crabby werewolf.
Why were you yelling? Show yourself at Neville,
Lupin snapped at Kingsley.
You woke me up,
he added petulantly. He was unrecognizable behind the mountain of clothing in his arms, Kingsley replied politely. However, the next time someone shows up on your porch and I've no idea who they are, I'll send them right up to your bedroom, you damned lazy-ass moron.
Sorry,
Lupin hissed and gave Neville a rather unwelcoming look.
Why'd you have a pile of clothes in front of your face? Mad-Eye would have just blown you to pieces.
He's moving in with you,
Rosie offered up cheerfully.
That's why he brought all his clothes.
What? Lupin said disbelievingly.
Weezer, make me some bloody coffee, will you? If you spit in it, I'll rip your head off.
Weezer gave him a vicious look, but scuttled quickly off to the side pantry.
Does grouchy in the morning,
Teddy announced happily.
Aunt Elizabeth says to just ignore him, but she doesn't always do it,
he added knowingly.
Sometimes, if he's too grouchy, she yells at him to go back to bed because I'd rather take care of these children by myself than have to put up with you,
he finished cheerily. Lupin gave Teddy an incredulous look.
Must you repeat every detail of my private life?
I think you've asked him that before,
Rosie put in affably.
That time he told everybody at the table you slept in muggle boxer shorts.
Kingsley snorted with amusement.
Oh, sorry. I guess I just did it too,
Rosie added amiably.
Why are you here?
Lupin barked out.
Teddy came and got me last night,
she replied haughtily.
He was having a bad dream and he didn't want to wake Elizabeth up because you told him she's got a baby to take care of now. He was crying, so I slept in his other bunk bed.
Teddy nodded enthusiastically at this explanation.
I love Rosie,
he squealed happily.
Well, that was very good of you,
Kingsley told her approvingly.
Very good. Remus has told me you have a kind heart.
Neville suddenly had the urge to vomit.
Sorry, Lupin sighed. I'm sorry, Rosie. Thank you.
No problem,
Rosie replied airily and gave Neville a nasty smirk. I wonder how many Dementors there are in Azkaban. Are they always with you, or do they just glide by now and then? Maybe it'd be worth it to kill you.
I know why Dad's especially grouchy,
Teddy yelled out triumphantly.
When we were on that boat, I had him to Aunt Elizabeth. He hoped Kingsley wouldn't keep him up nattering on all night because he really wanted to do it with her. Only that isn't the word he used. I'm not supposed to say the word he used.
He finished self-righteously and dug into his bowl of porridge.
Why were you born?
Lupin yelled.
I can't hear you, Dad. I'm ignoring him,
Teddy informed the rest of the group loftily.
Just like Aunt Elizabeth told me to do. I think he's especially grouchy because he's more tired because they were shagging. And shagging takes time. I don't know how much time, though. How much time does it take to shag, Dad?
Yes, Kingsley said thoughtfully.
Pray tell, you can give us an estimate.
Lupin closed his eyes, and Neville had the distinct impression he was counting to 10.
Why are you moving in, Neville?
He finally said wearily.
Are you bringing Alice too?
I'm not moving in, Neville replied vehemently. Do you think I'd just move into your house without even asking?
No, I also wouldn't have thought you'd send me a damned owl at 5 a.m. and then wake me up again 1.5 hours later.
Neville sent you an owl at 5 a.m,
Rosie said in disbelief.
Well, that's super rude.
Oh, fuck off. I hate you. I loathe you. Hey, who can I get in touch with your grandfather? Neville blurted out. Lupin gave him a horrified look.
Why did you say that?
He replied in a frightened voice.
For God's sake, why did you say that?
We may never know,
Kingsley replied in a dramatic whisper.
Longbottom has a great difficulty responding to the most rudimentary of questions. The matter may remain an unanswerable mystery. along with the reason he brought all the clothes.
He's retarded,
Rosie said cheerfully as she picked up another apple.
That's the answer to both questions.
Kingsley chuckled at this. Oh my God, I hate you more than Snape. I hate you more than Voldemort. Nobody has ever hated anybody as much as I hate you. Elizabeth bustled through the door, flung her dressing gown open, and yelled out three words Neville had never expected to hear her say.
Look at me! She shouted ecstatically.
He had a horrifying flash of Elizabeth's curvaceous figure in a diaphanous red silk nightgown, before wildly clapping his hands over his eyes.
Oh my God! Rosie yelled it excitedly. You look totally amazing! How did you do that? Wait till Mum sees!
Excellent, Kingsley commented appreciatively. You have a stunning figure.
I didn't see anything,
Neville mumbled quickly and peered through his fingers to ascertain how Lupin was taking all of this, but he was asleep with his head on the table and his coffee mug in his hand.
I'm sorry, Neville, Elizabeth squealed happily. You know I usually never show off like that, but I'm too happy to care.
Why? Why is she saying this? Please stop talking.
I was really depressed yesterday because my body looked terrible and everything was still messed up down there.
She added darkly and Rosie nodded sympathetically. Please stop talking. Please stop talking.
But Kingsley told me I should let Remus try his Reparo spell on me because he's great with that Reparo spell,
she screamed blissfully. Thanks. I didn't know that. I had no idea. Is he any good with fire? How about defense? Please stop talking.
So, he did the spell, Elizabeth screeched happily, and everything went back to the way it was, only better. My stomach looks great and my boobs look like they did in school,
she beamed ecstatically. Please stop talking. Somebody make her stop talking.
How did he get it back even better?
Rosie demanded curiously.
I told him to think about what I looked like naked on the beach when I was 17,
Elizabeth shouted, and Neville started choking on his dandelion juice.
That was totally brilliant,
Rosie said admiringly.
How was the beach? Where did you go?
I'm choking, Neville thought frantically. I'm choking. Has anybody noticed I'm choking here?
Wonderful,
Elizabeth replied happily. We went to Tortuga. Kingsley conjured up a wicked-looking bikini for me.
Oh, sorry we didn't invite you, Neville,
she added unconvincingly without even looking in his direction.
But it was better that way because then I could wear that totally slutty bikini since nobody was around except my husband and Teddy and Kingsley, who's gay,
she finished delightedly.
Did work out rather well,
Kingsley said agreeably. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Does anybody care that I'm not breathing? As soon as Elizabeth said the words totally slutty bikini, Lupin looked up from the table and smiled.
It was a very slutty bikini,
he told Rosie dramatically.
A dead slag lavender brown bikini. I love that thing. Kingsley charmed it on her when I wasn't looking, and when I saw it, I fell right out of the boat.
Neville tried glaring at Lupin, but all he could see were black spots in front of his eyes. I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die, you stupid, stupid prat. Not that you care, since all you care about is Elizabeth's totally slutty, dead slag, lavender brown bikini. Lupin glanced over at him briefly and sprang to his feet.
Neville, what the fuck? Is he choking?
Kingsley whirled around and pounded him on the back, and 12 ounces of dandelion juice spewed out of Neville's mouth across the table. Oh, crap. I think he broke my back. He did. I can breathe, but my back is broken.
Neville, Kingsley bellowed out. Neville, say something.
You should, oh, yeah,
Neville gasped out.
I was joking. Dandelion juice.
Oh, your face was all blue,
Elizabeth shrieked.
That was cool,
Teddy said happily.
Ace, you spit that juice all the way across the table.
Can't you even drink a glass of juice?
Rosie asked scornfully. Neville croaked out in a strangled tone. No one was looking at him.
Stop by the ministry before you leave,
Kingsley told Lupin sternly, and he sighed.
Sure,
he replied unenthusiastically.
I've got to go to Romania,
he told Elizabeth with an apologetic glance.
Just for the afternoon.
Yeah, don't worry about me. Really, don't. My back is broken, and I've got to tell the Minister of Magic, but what do you care? You're the worst friend anybody ever had.
Neville!
Teddy yelped happily.
Why are you making that awful face?
It's just... Your back is killing me,
Neville replied desperately.
I think some of the vertebrae are broken,
he mumbled quickly.
What?
Kingsley yanked up his shirt with a frown and began poking, none too gently, along his spine. This is not happening. He's not touching my body. He's not. I wish I'd choked to death and died.
You may be right, Shacklebolt said in a concerned voice. Neville, this is terrible. I'm awfully sorry.
"Then you have an order meeting tonight," Elizabeth wailed and pouted dreadfully at Lupin. "I thought you were off today. I'm going to miss you all day," she added forlornly.
Lupin put his arms around her and started whispering in her ear, and Elizabeth began giggling.
"Come sit on my lap,"
he pleaded, and Rosie wrinkled up her nose at him.
"Elizabeth's just putting that on," she announced knowingly. "Haven't you figured this out yet? She acts all sad, and then you start slobbering all over her, and you always fall for it."
"I know that," Lupin replied with a nasty smirk. "Maybe I like slobbering all over her."
Neville glowered at him horribly. "Yeah, don't worry about me. Don't worry that my back is broken and a giant gay man is pawing at my body. Really, don't. It's not a problem. You suck."
"There's nothing else for it," Kingsley said decisively. "Let's get going."
Going? Neville squeaked out in a high-pitched voice. "As in, the two of us? Together? The two of us going somewhere together?" He gave Lupin a desperate look, but Elizabeth was now smiling at him coquettishly, and he was completely oblivious to everyone else.
"'Tis Mungo's, of course," Kingsley replied impatiently. "We want to get that back fixed."
"Oi, look up! This is going to be brill!"
Alex Weasley announced happily to Tim and Melvin, who were playing chess on Tim's bed.
"Rupert showed me a clean spell for clothes, so you don't have to take them down to the dungeon. Watch!"
"Whenever he says this is going to be brill," Tim declared loudly, "that means he's going to do something stupid.
You're a great mug. You'd believe anything,"
he told Alex stubbornly.
"Rupert's a giant lump of hippogriff dung."
"Yeah,"
Melvin chimed in.
"That's true, Alex. You know it is."
Rupert was Alex's older brother, a sixth year who maintained he possessed the ability to time travel into the future, put the imperious curse on Professor McGonagall, and levitate the entire castle into the air if he wanted to.
"Says you,"
Alex replied obstinately and flung a long white broadcloth dress shirt and a pair of purple socks onto the bed.
"Take a shift at this, boys."
"You're an idiot,"
Tim announced scornfully.
"Maledicto!"
Alex shouted and waved his wand with a flourish, and Melvin and Tim jumped to their feet at once, knocking the chess set to the floor.
"That's a curse!" they yelled furiously.
"Bollocks!"
Alex hollered angrily.
"I meant to say Maledicto, or Maledicto."
"We're all going to die,"
intoned a muffled, gloomy voice from the bed in the corner.
"Nobody's ever been killed by clothes, Clive,"
Melvin said disgustedly.
"Well, not that I know of, anyway."
"Coach Weasley almost got strangled by those robes in the closet at Grimald Place," Clive wailed stubbornly from beneath his covers.
"Well, he didn't die, did he?"
Alex yelled back.
"Wasn't you going dead arse up? It's 2 in the afternoon, mate."
"There's nothing I want to do,"
Clive yawned and rolled over. Timothy shook his head in disgust. Clive Orange, he thought, was the laziest person he'd ever known, and since he knew Kenny, Henry, and Victor, he figured that was saying something. Clive also possessed the delightful ability to predict the very worst possible outcome of any situation, a talent which had made him the particular favorite of Professor Trelawney. The three boys stared at the shirt and socks for a moment, and then Tim marched boldly up to the bedside.
"We aren't afraid of you,"
he announced defiantly.
Tim,
Melvin said warningly.
"We better get Professor Longbottom,"
Alex said quickly.
"I bet he knows the counter curse."
He isn't here. I went by his cottage,"
Melvin replied irritably.
"He's probably having loads of fun, since classes don't start till tomorrow. I bet he and Professor Lupin are destroying things and killing bad people and everything,"
he finished sullenly.
"Silly question, Tim."
A tall boy with curly black hair and a thick Irish brogue stepped out of the bathroom with a towel around his waist.
"But why are you staring at them shirt and those socks?"
"Alex cursed them,"
Melvin informed him gloomily.
"And Tim's trying to show them who's boss, I guess."
Melvin, Alex, and the black-haired boy, whose name was Dugan McDougal, all shook their heads sadly at this.
"He's not quite the full shilling,"
Alex whispered with a pointed look at Tim.
"No, he's not. Crazy as a loon,"
Dugan agreed cheerfully.
"It's in his family, it is. He can't help it. Those clothes are going to get him,"
Melvin sighed.
"We're all going to die,"
Clive moaned pitifully from his bed. Timothy paid no attention whatsoever to his sweet mates, but leaned over the shirt and socks in a threatening manner.
"We're the Junior Marauders,"
he shouted.
"We'll blow you up if you mess with us."
The shirt immediately flew up and began creeping around the dorm on sleeves and tails like some slinking jungle beast, and the boys stared frozen with fascinated horror. Even Clive sat up in his bed and looked mildly interested.
"Get yourself in a drawer,"
Timothy told it arrogantly, and the shirt went for his throat. When Esther Claridge and her sweet mate Serena pounded up the stairs to the boys' dorms, 15 other Gryffindors in hot pursuit, they came upon a frightful scene. Timothy had a short sword in his hand and was desperately hacking at a shirt that had its sleeves wrapped around his neck and was attempting to strangle him. Alex was rolling about on the floor, tugging ineffectually at a purple sock wedged tightly in his mouth, and another balled-up purple sock was giving Melvin a merry chase around the room. Dugan was alternately leaping for the sock, chasing Melvin, making wild attempts to pull the shirt sleeves off Tim's neck, and trying to get the sock out of Alex's mouth without breaking off his teeth. Clive had gone back to sleep. Two of the 6 years took out their wands and began shouting spells at the shirt, none of which seemed to have any effect, and Timothy became very pale and dropped his sword. "It's choking him to death!" a first-year screamed and burst into terrified tears, and half of them stormed out of the room.
"Quick! Quick, go get a professor! Anybody!"
Serena grabbed Esther's arm and shouted. Esther tore off down the stairs, flew through the common room, flung herself out of the portrait hole, and rolled right into Dragomir's feet. This was quite possibly the first time a student had ever been glad to see Dragomir.
"Professor Dragomir!" she screamed. "Help! A shirt's choking him! It's cursed! It's killing him!"
Dragomir gave her a frankly skeptical look.
"A cursed shirt," he replied coldly.
"You've got to help!"
Esther yelled frantically and tugged him by his sleeve towards the fat lady.
"Oh, I can't remember the password! I'm too scared!"
"Open this door,"
Dragomir told the fat lady impatiently, and she leapt up with a squeal and blundered off into another painting. He then let out a great sigh, as if Timothy's impending death was just about the most wearisome thing he could possibly imagine, and climbed through the portrait hole with Esther stumbling behind.
"It's Dragomir!"
shrieked one of the first years. This was apparently much more frightening than the impending death of a fellow student.
"Scarpa!"
shouted a sixth year, and the entire group raced right back to their rooms. When Dragomir stormed up the stairs, Tim was on the floor, his face quite purple.
"Dejacelo!"
he snapped irritably, and the shirt let out a terrified squeak and flew into a corner of the room.
"Morville! Weasley! Black! What is the meaning of this nonsense?"
"Well, don't worry about Tim!"
Esther screamed and stomped her foot.
"Don't worry that he's half dead! Don't bother carrying him to the school nurse like Professor Longbottom would do!"
Dragomir gave her a frightful look.
"You shall never," he said icily, "raise your voice at me again, Miss Claridge, or you will find yourself hoping for death by strangulation. 5 detentions. Go to your room."
2 hours later, Neville was comfortably stoned on a double-strength dose of pain potion, which Shacklebolt had demanded from the healer in hopes that Neville would relax and quit irritating him. "He's relaxed, all right," Kingsley thought sourly as Neville lolled about on a cot, with a moronic grin spread across his beaming face.
"This is brilliant," he told Kingsley enthusiastically. "I was scared as crap that we're going to make me get undressed in front of you. But you might have seen my arse. Or other things. You know what I mean,"
he nodded sagely. Kingsley gave him an incredulous look.
"Yeah, I didn't want you getting all, you know, sexually frustrated when you saw my arse,"
Neville continued self-righteously.
"I would have felt awfully bad for you. Honestly, I would."
Kingsley, possibly for the first time in his life, was rendered completely speechless.
"It's a good thing you don't have to help Remus with Full Moon. He doesn't have any clothes on afterwards,"
Neville hissed dramatically.
"I was worried I'd be embarrassed, but I really don't care. I'd live with Dean always walking around our dorm room with nothing on,"
he added disgustedly.
"Me and Harry figured he just wanted to show off his big dick. But he's black, you know. He's got this great giant dick like a troll's club."
He made a revolted face.
"Yes, we men of African descent are annoyingly proud of that fact,"
Shacklebolt replied dryly.
"I don't suppose anything could possibly persuade you to quit speaking."
"No, I like talking to you. Anyway, it's not just that Remus hasn't had clothes on after Full Moon. The person helping him has to put them on him. And I know that would make you sexually frustrated for sure. I feel awfully sorry for you."
He nodded solemnly at Kingsley.
"Indeed," Shacklebolt replied blandly. "It's good to know you're thinking of my welfare, Longbottom."
"Thanks. Not everybody's like me," Neville added smugly. "See, Arthur, well, he's mad because you won't give him that extra funding to study those coasters. He thinks you play favourites. He told me and Harry, if Kingsley's pretty blonde werewolf asked for those galleons, he'd have gotten 500 more. Will he shell out so much as a note for a balding middle-aged ginger? No. That's what he said,"
Neville added unnecessarily.
I see, Kingsley rejoined gravely.
Thanks. It must suck to be a minister of magic because everybody talks about you behind your back. Rima said you needn't be crawling up his arse every 5 minutes about those stupid oral reports he figures you don't even read and just throw in the trash.
A frown creased across Shacklebolt's forehead.
But he can't tell you that, Neville said consolingly, because he said you'd send him to an underground cave in Egypt for a month or something.
Hmm, Kingsley murmured thoughtfully. An underground cave in Egypt.
Yeah, and Molly, she says you're going to hell because you're gay, and it's obvious you play favourites because you made Lupin captain the Order of the Prefix and not Arthur.
Well, Remus is much better with grammar than Arthur, Kingsley responded pleasantly. Had top marks for Gryffindor, as I recall. Who better to run the Order of the Prefix?
Sure, that makes sense. Hey, did you know I got top marks for Gryffindor too? Not that I'm bragging.
I'm aware of that. I was at your graduation, Kingsley said politely. Although I can't say as you'd remember it right now.
Oh, yeah. I do remember. You gave that super long, boring speech. Speech went on and on. Harry looked at me and said, I wish Voldemort had killed me so I wouldn't have to listen to any more of this speech. That's what he said.
Did he now?
Yeah, he did. Ron thought it was hilarious, but Hermione told him they should respect the new Minister of Magic no matter how boring he was.
Well, very good of her, Kingsley replied wearily.
She's not always so good,
Neville hissed conspiratorially.
She thinks you're really, really bossy. After that last order meeting, she said, he didn't shout all the time. I think he's a great, horrible bully.
That's what she said. He finished in a pleased voice. You're a veritable font of information, Longbottom, Kingsley said impassively.
Thanks,
Neville replied modestly as he rolled from side to side on the cot.
If you ever want to know something, just ask me. I'll never tell. I hate it when people gossip.
A bald-headed healer in lime-green robes scuttled through the door, took one look at Neville, and wisely handed Kingsley the bottle of pain potion.
Send the bill to me personally,
Kingsley informed him sternly as he motioned to Neville to get up. And not to the Ministry. Number 48 Hampton Square, London.
Very good, sir. You're very trustworthy, sir. We all know that,
the man shouted, and Kingsley sighed again.
Not everybody thinks that, Neville whispered as he staggers out the door beside him. Ron doesn't. That's why he's scared of you. He said, you never know what Kingsley's up to. He's sneaky as shit. You can't trust him. That's what he said.
Fascinating, Kingsley responded sardonically.
Thanks, Neville beamed with a self-effacing shrug. Honestly, don't mention it.
When the two of them emerged into the alley, Kingsley stopped and proffered his arm.
Hold on now, we'll do a side-along. I'm not paying for your stoned ass to get splinched.
Okay, sure, Neville responded happily. This has been totally fun, hanging out with you. I was wishing I'd choked and died when you said we had to go somewhere together, but honestly, it's been totally fun.
Shacklebolt smiled to himself.
I don't know that I would classify it as totally fun, he intoned solemnly, but it will certainly be totally fun to meet up with you again, and thank you for expressing concern over my sexual frustrations.
Yeah, that'll be great, Neville told him amiably. Just dial me any time, we'll get together. I'm not that busy. Anyway, I'd make time for you, he added kindly.
When they apparated to Diagon Alley, Kingsley hoped there might be a moment of silence as Neville got his bearings, but he kept right on talking.
So anyway, Charlie told Ron it's stupid to be scared of you. He says you're nothing but talk. He told me, Kingsley's all teeth and no fangs. I'd take him on any time. That's what he said.
Is there anyone in the Order, Kingsley asked him pleasantly, that you aren't wanting to be very, very angry with you?
Neville thought about this for a moment.
Ginny. He shuddered. I don't want her mad at me. She's got a mean streak, he nodded knowingly. I'm surprised she didn't kill you off in her books, too. She says you're an arrogant troll and you think you're better than everybody else.
Kingsley just sighed.
I'm buying you lunch, he told Neville irritably as he steered him in the direction of the leaky cauldron. I suppose I should, and although I will be subject to your incessant monologue, at least I won't have 20 interruptions and might possibly even finish my lunch.
Sure. Thanks. Did you know Luna says the Ministry's cutting off goblins' feet and selling them to the Death Eaters? You know, for that Draw to the Living Dead potion, and she knows you're in on it. She does, because she got some blue aura around her bed the other day,
Neville pronounced seriously.
Of course, the dreaded blue aura, Kingsley replied soberly and turned to the gnome in the red silk livery, who had prostrated himself on the floor in front of him. And two for the charms room.
I'm glad we didn't go to the hog's head, Neville hissed as they followed the gnome to their table. I'm a fourth bow let me in. Can you believe that?
Ah, Kingsley replied genially as he sat himself down. He hasn't forgiven you, I see.
No, it's totally unfair. Just because he saw those pictures of us laughing at him behind that stupid old bench, he spat out sullenly.
Well, you needn't blame the bench, Kingsley replied mildly. Who told you two great fools to go hide behind it?
It was a brilliant place to hide, Neville announced defiantly. The Emily was 20 feet away and they couldn't find us. Aberforth kept yelling that he could hear us laughing, but they said we weren't anywhere around.
You are adorably naive, Longbottom, Kingsley replied drolly. The MLE most certainly did not want to find you two.
He glanced up at the pompous wizard in lavender silk dress robes and tie who managed the restaurant, the red-jacketed gnome who had apparently abandoned his post, and three fairies, all of whom were nodding obsequiously while awaiting his order.
Glazed cranberry ham, sprinkled with newt blood and stuffed with goblin giblets, side order of jacket potatoes, the generous amount of garlic butter, and a decanter of claret.
And I would appreciate it if the ham were properly warmed this time, Shacklebolt said sternly, and all five attendants nodded furiously. Neville?
Me. veal tondos with pineapple pumpkin juice, enchanted almonds, and salamander sauce. And a whole lot of jelly rolls and some of that elf-made wine.
No wine, Kingsley snapped. He will have tea.
What do you think the MLE was scared?
Neville asked gleefully.
My stellar intuition, Kingsley proclaimed sardonically. Or perhaps because while you were sleeping, Remus stood up and shouted, We're over here! Come and get us! And they blundered right off in the opposite direction.
Ha! Neville announced snidely.
Ha ha ha! Who's scared of me? Ha!
I'm quite certain they did not want to take you on, Kingsley told him sternly. But before you go off into fits of self-satisfaction, consider the company you were keeping.
Nobody's scared of him, Neville replied rudely.
Kingsley was rather startled when Neville suddenly leapt to his feet, knocking the entire table to the floor with a great crash.
I'm supposed to meet Kasmina in the food court at noon, he yelled desperately. She's going to think I stood her up. We've got to go.
Of course we do, Kingsley barked out. Why in the hell should I ever get to finish my damned lunch?
You're the one that broke me back, Neville replied sullenly, and Kingsley decided he was keeping the pain potion for himself.
When Kingsley and Neville apparated into the food court, Kingsley landed right on top of three bespectacled warlocks in dress robes, and Neville crashed into two elf servers and their heavily laden trays.
Get off me, great stalking hippogriff!
Squealed one of the elves.
Can't you operate properly?
Beg your pardon, Minister.
Very, very sorry,
the warlocks babbled frenetically.
You needn't apologize. It was our fault,
Neville told them reassuringly, and Kingsley frowned and yanked him unceremoniously aside.
Let them blather out their apologies, he said impatiently. They shouldn't have been standing where I wanted to apparate.
Maybe Ginny's got a point, Neville thought to himself. Arthur waved at them happily from a corner table, and Cosmina glanced up with a welcoming smile.
You must forgive me, Miss Dragomir,
Kingsley announced seriously as they approached the table.
I've held Longbottom up in conversation, I fear. I find his advice to be of inestimable value.
This was pronounced so sarcastically that Arthur hid his face behind his menu and snorted with laughter. But Cosmina seemed quite impressed.
Oh, no,
she stammered.
I wouldn't want to interrupt you, Neville, when you were with the minister.
Come along, Arthur, Kingsley said sternly. Longbottom can finish up the tour. Neville, don't forget the order meeting tonight. I do look forward to seeing you again,
he added gravely.
Thanks. Definitely, I won't forget.
Neville looked at Cosmina in her dark green velvet dress robes and began smiling from ear to ear. She's even prettier than I remember, he thought dreamily. Look at her eyes. And I'm not as stoned as I was, so I won't embarrass myself, but I'm a little stoned, so I won't be nervous. Not that I'm ever nervous around her anyway, because she's so amazing. I just wish I could be with her all the time.
You finished eating?
He asked politely.
Oh, yes,
Cosmina replied enthusiastically.
I'm so glad you came. I was afraid you'd forgotten, but do not worry,
she added as Neville began to sputter out an apology.
It is much more important that you speak to the minister. It is very important who one knows,
she finished decisively.
I have learned this. It has greatly helped my career.
She's really smart, Neville thought admiringly. She's incredibly beautiful, and she's really smart. I can't believe she'd even like me, but she does. I know she does. It's just the most incredible eyes. It's like you could drown in them or something. Like they suck you in and hypnotize you. It's definitely love. I'm definitely in love with her. This is the best day ever. He missed the sun. When Liviu Radu was a small boy, he and his younger brothers spent most of their time outdoors, playing games with other boys in fields and woods, exploring dirt roads of the town along with old women, chicken, and peddlers, or splashing in the nearby lake. It was the contented happiness of a childhood in which each day was a gift to be enjoyed, with the certain expectation that tomorrow would be just the same. Those days were gone. Long gone. 279 years, the length of time that had passed since he'd been bitten. Gone, to be exact. A cloudy day was physically painful to him, and bright sunlight excruciating. He supposed he could not actually claim to miss the sun, really, since it was quite impossible now to even remember it. For the first 50 years he had, at least, kept the memories, the sight of tall, waving, sun-dappled green grass, the warmth of early morning brightness on a country lane, the beauty of a pattern of sunlight shining through lace-trimmed curtains onto gleaming wooden floors. These flashes of memory and the emotions that had accompanied them always brought a rare flicker of happiness into the shadow land of his grim existence. Now, without even the appearance of a memory from time to time, the darkness of the world he inhabited was almost unbearable. He took a torch down from an iron sconce on the white stone wall and strode down the long, dim corridor, frowning at the state of his floor. The new houseboy had not swept again. Laziness, along with dishonesty, cowardice, and lack of honor, was one of the many qualities Radu could not tolerate. He stopped by the small room where the boy slept and frowned when he glanced in the door. He had found the boy somewhat appealing initially, with his slim and muscular build, clear brown eyes, and engaging smile, and Radu liked to choose servants who performed double duty as lovers. He certainly had no interest in any sort of relationship, merely the thought of disclosing personal feelings was repugnant to him. A highly intelligent man with a decidedly scholarly bent, Radu could not abide a man without knowledge equal to his own, especially in the areas of literature, poetry, and ideas. And neither could he respect anyone who was not as fearless and as skilled a fighter as himself. This, he had once thought wryly, meant that there was no man in Eastern Europe who could possibly live up to his standards. He turns his thoughts resolutely back to the houseboy. The young man had proved quite disappointing from the first, dull, uninspired in bed, and incessantly talkative. Now it appeared he was slothful as well, for he was stretched out on his mattress napping at 3 in the afternoon, when he knew very well he was meant to work until 6. Radu gave him a kick with the toe of his boot. The boy, whose name Radu had already forgotten, yawned, sat up, and gave him an insolent smile. This was his last mistake. He flung out his wand and threw the boy up against the wall with a most satisfying killing curse, and then gazed at the limp body thoughtfully. Radu always fed off the newly dead. His honor did not permit killing unless necessary to retain the respect or power that was his by birthright, and there were plenty of dead available when one had half a dozen men whose only job was to search them out. If necessary, he would even go a week or two without feeding, as highly unpleasant as that might be, rather than kill, or worse yet, in his opinion, curse another being with the same existence that he endured. He felt no remorse, therefore, when he picked up the boy's body and decided to enjoy a delectable afternoon snack. "Better finish it off before he deigns to honor my doorstep with his presence," Radu thought sourly. His guest for the afternoon, he imagined, would not understand this sort of behavior. Then again, he mused, perhaps he would. It's in his nature, is it not, no matter how he may deny it. An opportunity to aggravate his strange associate was always most enjoyable. Perhaps he would bring up the subject. A very odd fellow, paradoxical, brilliant, but flawed, given to emotion and affection. These were two qualities Radu knew led to nothing but trouble and despair. Not that he need bother warning his acquaintance about this. "He is most stubborn," he thought with a frown, "and he listens to absolutely nothing I say. It is quite annoying. He actually annoys me greatly. There is no explanation for why I keep inviting him back. Apparently, I desperately lack a diversion." He sank his teeth into the smooth and tender flesh of the boy's neck with a sigh of satisfaction. "This will be the last time," he thought decisively. "There's no need for me to spend time with such a ridiculous fellow. He's very dangerous, very skilled. Yet he will not use his abilities to gain power. He's a fool, and it's a waste. Someone who, well, is quite devastatingly attractive, I suppose, and does not even know it."
He was beginning to feel so irritated he ripped into another piece of flesh with much more force than was needed. Yet he squanders his attentions on a woman, a muggle woman, without apology. It's insupportable. He shook his head derisively and angrily tore into the muscle below. He is not worth the annoyance he brings me. He annoys me when he's not even here. I cannot think of anyone who has ever annoyed me so greatly. Let's see, Quentin thought to himself as he stepped on the elevator at noon. Who's going to have a big fucking fit today? Hopefully it'll be someone I can hit. Well, unless Solange is back. This was a rather nerve-wracking thought. He had been granted a reprieve from punishment for the Choco Hoo-Ha cake when Solange went off to Elizabeth's for a week to help with the baby, since Shacklebolt apparently didn't believe in paternity leave and had put Lupin right back to work the day after Annie was born. Quentin wasn't sure if he was relieved or terrified to see Solange, who looked quite delectable in a pale blue cashmere sweater, sitting at the table, but he wasn't able to look at her for long. His gaze was drawn inexorably towards Lucretia, as if she were roadkill. What the fuck is she wearing? Lucretia was strutting about the room in a full-length, buttercup yellow mink coat, with wide pink stripes, and her red high heels, which she apparently felt matched the coat. "Ain't this the prettiest coat in the whole world?" she shouted excitedly. "I bought it with that money Mr. Lupin sent me for being a midwife. He figure I deserve double for putting up with him," she nodded happily. "And he right about that. Yes, sir, he sure is."
"Well, it's very pretty, Lucretia,"
Solange said politely.
"It is the bestest coat I ever saw,"
Natalie screamed happily.
"It's the bestest coat in the whole world. We could make a fool out of it."
"Yeah, yeah," Nicholas hollered enthusiastically. "All of us could fit under that great giant coat, and Mum, too."
Lucas and Elizabeth clapped their hands delightedly. Lucretia fortunately had paid no attention to this, but strolled slowly past Quentin with a meaningful look, apparently awaiting compliments. Fuck. Fuck, what in the hell am I supposed to say?
Right. That's.
He shot Jamie a desperate look, but Jamie just shrugged at him apologetically.
It's, right, a coat.
Lucretia looked at him with a wounded expression, and Quentin sat down beside Solange and irritably flipped up his paper.
"What the fuck am I supposed to say?"
he hissed to her.
"That's the ugliest coat I've ever seen."
"Well, she doesn't know,"
Solange replied cheerfully and took a bite of her salad. "So she's in a good mood. This may be bad. Maybe she's decided she's definitely moving out. Fuck, she's been over at Elizabeth's. But Elizabeth told her she could move in with them, and then she wouldn't have to worry about not seeing Tim. It's not as if that pussy-whipped motherfucker would ever tell Elizabeth no about anything. What the hell is up with Kenny?" Kenny was staring worshipfully at Lucretia, his lower lip trembling with excitement.
"You look totally hot in that coat, dude!"
he shrieked ecstatically.
"I love that coat, dude! You're so pretty!"
he added in a lovesick tone.
"The fuck is that all about?"
Quentin shouted. "He's been doing it all morning," Henry shrugged.
"Talking about Lucretia. He says he's in love with her."
Kenny sidled up to Lucretia and began stroking the sleeve of her coat with a rapturous expression.
"You look foxy in that coat, dude,"
he moaned lustfully.
"You're the foxiest chick ever, dude! You're even hotter than Pat Benatar!"
"Who's been in my room?"
Rosie screeched angrily as she stomped up to the table.
"Somebody took something I had in a vial."
"What the fuck did you have in a vial?" Quentin barked out. "Are you on drugs or something?"
Rosie gave her father an extremely haughty look.
"No," she shouted back, "but I ought to be since I live with you. It's the knowledge potion I stole from William,"
she added without the slightest vestige of embarrassment. "Kenny stole it from you," Henry informed her with a yawn.
"Saw an empty vial on the floor in his hall this morning. Bet he drank it before he came down here, and Lucretia was the first person he saw."
Rosie burst into tears.
"Don't worry about it," Henry said hastily. "You don't need that shit."
"I don't care about the lovage potion," she wailed. "I was at Elizabeth's for breakfast, and Neville was there, and he still hates me."
"Who gives a shit about that fucking toad lover?" Quentin yelled furiously. "Stop that bawling! I can't hear myself think in this damned house!"
Jamie glared at his father.
"He really likes you, Rosie," he told his sister in a sympathetic tone. "He just won't admit it. Ginny told me. She knows."
"He doesn't act like it!"
Rosie blubbered.
"Nobody's ever gonna like me. Ever. I hate my life. I hate myself!"
She buried her face in her hands and kept sobbing.
"I really love you, man,"
Kenny yelped happily to Lucretia.
"I can't tell you why, dude, but I'm trapped by your love and I'm chained to your side."
Henry actually spat his eggs out on his plate. "That's a Pat Benatar song," he shouted. "What's wrong with you?" Lucretia told Kenny rudely.
"I ain't interested. I knows I'm a big hot mama. You gotta have to control yourself," she added sternly.
"I'm losing control, man," Kenny shrieked. "Are you gonna turn me away, dude? Or touch me deep inside?"
"Oh, for fuck's sake, shut up!" Henry yelled and flung his chair to the floor before storming out of the room.
Kenny did not so much as look in his brother's direction.
"There's no way this will die, dude!"
he screamed desperately and fell to his knees.
"Kenny!" Quentin shouted threateningly. "The creature told you to leave her the fuck alone. Now get off her ass!"
"Go ahead and hit me, man!" Kenny wailed. "Hit me with your best shot! Get your damn rifle, dude! Fire away!"
"That's a Pat Benatar song, too," Jamie told the table knowingly as he dug into his enormous plate of chicken tikka masala. "He sang every one of those Pat Benatar songs like 12 times when me and Rosie were driving him back from that trip," he finished quickly.
"Blimey!" Victor screamed and clutched at his head. "You split me bloody head open! Shut your bloody yapper or beat the tump out of you!"
he finished threateningly.
"I can take the pain, dude!"
Kenny hollered back triumphantly.
"Love is a battlefield!"
Victor smashed Kenny over the head with an empty vodka bottle and staggered out of the room.
"It ain't the 1980s, Lucretia replied disdainfully. "I ain't never liked that trashy white girl anyways. You let me alone."
"Your love's like a tidal wave, man," Kenny screeched and fell at Lucretia's feet. "It's spinning out of control, dude."
"You get up off that floor," Lucretia shouted wrathfully. "I done told you I ain't interested in your ass. You ain't even got no damn dick."
"Nobody's ever gonna be in love with me,"
Loretta shrieked.
"Why is it Lucretia? Why is it always my sisters? Why is it never me?"
"Maybe it's those balls of hair you got arranged round your plate," Jamie suggested cheerfully.
"They're decorative,"
Loretta yelled back angrily.
"I've been saving them for my hairbrush. They would look prettier on any plate. I like pretty things. Not that anyone would care,"
she added pathetically.
"You're right about that," Jamie replied agreeably and shoved the rest of his chicken in his mouth. "I'm off anyway. You coming or not?"
Apparently, Kenny had forgotten this was the first day of term.
"No way, dude," he shrieked. "This is love, man. It's more important than any stupid old college."
"That doesn't make any sense at all," Jamie told him knowingly. "If you love someone, you want a job where you can make money. Nobody's going to marry a loser
like you," he added cheerfully to himself as he picked up his backpack and went out the front door.
"You're the right kind of sinner, dude,"
Kenny whined loudly as he pawed desperately at Lucretia's arm,
"to release my inner fantasies."
"I ain't no sinner,"
she screeched and shoved him to the ground.
"The good Lord Jesus done took away my sin, and I don't want to hear nothing about your fantasies. It made me puke up my breakfast," she added darkly. "Not that I got to eat yet, because I ain't got to.
Whatever we deny or embrace, for worse or for better,"
Kenny screamed blissfully.
"We belong, we belong, we belong, we belong together."
Lucretia turned and fled the room at an astonishing pace for such a large woman, and Kenny leapt to his feet and sprinted after her. Rosie jumped up to follow them, hurrying through the kitchen doors as Lucretia steamrolled towards the back with Kenny hot on her heels.
"Get away from me!"
Lucretia screamed as she yanked open the door to a small dark pantry and threw herself in as if fleeing the devil himself. Kenny sped right in after her with Rosie close behind, but unfortunately the room was too small to allow time to slow down, and Lucretia plowed right into the shelves as Kenny and Rosie slammed into her backside. The three toppled unceremoniously into a heap on the floor, and the door clicked shut with an ominous locking sound. Doomsday, Lucretia thought to herself, had finally come, but not as described in the Book of Revelations.
"Let me die,"
Lucretia moaned.
"Oh Lord, let me die. I can't breathe,"
Rosie yelled in a panicked voice.
"I can't see. It's dark. There's not even room to turn round in here. We're trapped. I'm scared,"
she shrieked dramatically.
"The scariest that bald-headed, freckle-faced cracker that's trying to grab my ass,"
Lucretia shouted.
"Quit shoving me, Kenny,"
Rosie snapped irritably.
"I'm sorry, Miss Rosie. I done thought I was pushing on Kenny,"
Kenny cackled loudly. Rosie fumbled at the shelves for a light switch, but only succeeded in knocking three enormous jars of marmalade to the floor, shattering them into pieces and spraying jelly in all directions, and the three began slipping and sliding across the jam-covered floor.
"Help!"
Rosie screamed ineffectually as her arms flailed helplessly in the air.
"Help! I'm gonna get crushed!
When the creature's great giant ass falls on me, she added sulkily to herself. I gonna have a stroke, Lucretia wailed. I knows it. My blood pressure up. I knows it. Kitty gonna kill me. I might already be dead. She finished direly and landed with a loud plop onto her generous behind. Kitty skidded into Lucretia and toppled onto her lap, and Rosie's feet flew out from under her and she landed face first on the floor.
This is the best day ever, man.
Kenny screeched happily.
I'm trapped in a closet, dude, with my one true love.
Get your cracker ass off of me, Lucretia hollered.
Ow, Rosie moaned. My face is smashed. I know my old face is broken into pieces. I can't even see. I've got jam in my eyes and...
She paused.
Wait,
she squealed joyfully.
My ring, I forgot about that.
What ring? Lucretia said suspiciously. What ring you talk about?
You haven't got any ring, dude, Kenny mumbled sulkily. Yes, I do. Remember when I went to that concert in that really bad part of town? Elizabeth was freaking out and saying I was going to get murdered.
No, ma'am, Lucretia sniffed haughtily. No, ma'am, I don't. Rosie wished she were standing so she could stomp her foot.
Elizabeth was really upset, so Lupin gave me this ring. He told me I could summon him with it if I was in danger.
Shut up, dude, Kenny screamed angrily. You better not call that weird-ass wizard man.
That fucker stole my dick, dude. He didn't steal it, Rosie replied irritably. What do you want with it? Maybe mine's bigger than his, dude,
Kenny said spitefully.
Yeah, I bet he swapped mine out with his, man. Ew, Rosie shrieked. You're so disgusting. And I doubt it. I bet your dick's 2 inches long.
Both of you, hush up, Lucretia grumbled. Don't be talking about nobody's dick. I don't want to hear that. You use that ring, Miss Rosie, so he can get us out of here. Kenny yanked on Rosie's arm in the darkness, and she slapped at him feverishly.
Ow, that's my bosoms you done hit, Miss Rosie. Sorry, Rosie wailed. Don't you touch me, she yelled threateningly at Kenny. I'll break your arm, man, Kenny howled hysterically. This is my best shot, dude. Maybe I don't have a dick, man, but I can grab her tits. You just try and break my arm, Rosie squealed angrily. I'm calling right now and telling him you're attacking me.
That'd be good, Lucretia said complacently.
You tells him that, Miss Rosie. Ha! And tell him what Kenny said about his dick being bigger than his, she whispered conspiratorially. Men's don't like that. No, ma'am, they sure don't.
I bet he torched that skinny white ass up then.
I'm gonna kill you, dude!
Kenny bellowed and threw himself at Rosie, and when they crashed into the shelves, an open sack of flour fell right onto Kenny's head, covering his face entirely.
I'm stuttering, dude! He screamed. I can't breathe, man!
He blundered forward and grabbed desperately at the first thing his hands encountered, Rosie's neck. Rosie turned her ring twice and yelled into it.
Remus! Help! Help! Somebody's trying to kill me!
The fourth floor is the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures, Neville told Cosmina knowingly as they stepped into a long orange hallway filled with multicolored birds, enormous overgrown pigeons, and an array of flapping owls swooping over their heads. Watch out, he added as they stepped together over some owl droppings. We're actually alone together, and I'm still not nervous, he thought dreamily. And she's so beautiful. Look at how those gold ceilings sparkle on her hair and in her eyes. She has the prettiest eyes. I wish this afternoon would last forever.
"Here's the Beast and Being Division," he said authoritatively as they stopped in front of a large wooden desk, where an effeminate-looking vampire dressed in a violet-striped cape, red velvet breeches, and a lurid green waistcoat sat painting his nails. "Antonin Grindel, Kuzmina Dragomir. She's the new ambassador from Romania."
"Terribly good to meet you," he replied dramatically and sashayed forward to shake her hand. "Welcome to the Ministry. I hope you'll have better luck than the last one," he added politely, and Kuzmina smiled weakly.
Antonin glanced back rather coyly at Neville.
I thought I might have my fangs colored turquoise, you know, to match.
He indicated the wide turquoise stripe in his long black hair.
What do you think?
Yeah, it'd be great, Tony. Why not?
I knew you'd think so, he beamed.
Oh, and that moon calf you order will be in next week. And we have several new baby dragons, he whispered loudly. I'll show you, but you mustn't tell a soul. They are just adorable. Can you even imagine? Magical dragons. They speak.
What did they say? Neville replied interestedly.
Oh, well, Anton waved his hand dismissively. Just things like, feed me a great fanged git. They're terribly rude. But young, I suppose they haven't learned better.
Neville stifled a laugh at this.
I've got 4 more floors to show her. Maybe if we have time left over, we'll come back.
What do you think? He asked Cosmina.
Whatever you want to do is fine, Neville,
she said agreeably. Ha! Somebody who lets me decide things. She did not make any further comments as they walked towards the lift, however, and Neville glanced at her worriedly when they stepped inside.
Is something wrong? He said apprehensively.
Oh, it's probably very silly,
she replied hesitantly and looked over her shoulder at an ugly goblin with 3 ears, who was obviously listening in on their conversation.
I should not talk about it here.
Prate!
The lift screeched to a halt, tossing the goblin to the floor, and Neville gave him a nasty look and motioned to the door.
Go on, he told him rudely.
This isn't my floor,
the goblin shouted outraged,
and you're not to use a spell to stop the lift. I'll report it to the MLE.
Ha! Better go higher than that. Take it up with someone in the Order of the Phoenix,
Neville replied threateningly, and the goblin, after giving him a long, angry look, stomped his bare-webbed foot in a rage and hustled out the door.
You should not have done that,
Cosmina told him reproachfully.
It's just that I'm not sure how well I will fit in here.
What do you mean? Neville said loudly with a rising sense of panic. You'll fit in great. You will. You'll love it here.
I do not know,
she replied fretfully.
I've been here in town 4 days, and the minister told me I should meet with your friend Remus Lupin, since, as the minister said, he's my expert on Romania,
she finished rather bitterly.
And he will not answer my owls. Then I see him this morning, and he makes excuses. He will not set up a time to meet with me. Oh, he is polite,
she said dismissively as Neville's face began turning very red.
But when I inquire about something, he answers me with a question.
Yeah, he's definitely trying to avoid you then, Neville replied knowingly. I mean, don't worry about it, he added hastily. I'm sure it's just a misunderstanding. We get along with everybody, well, unless they're after his wife, but you're not lesbian, so...
His voice trailed off as Cosmina gave him a strange look.
He has the minister's ear,
Cosmina said agitatedly.
I have heard this from many people. He is his confidant. If he does not like me, the minister will not like me either.
I'll straighten all this out, Neville announced defiantly. He listens to me. I'll tell him you're great, you'll see. Well, let's go see if he's in his office. Kingsley told him to stop by here before he went to...
Oh, crap.
I know he went to Romania then,
Cosmina said passionately.
I am the ambassador from Romania. He does not even tell me he's going there or why. We should be working together.
Neville frowned at this, but only for a moment. Actually, that's not a bad idea. I don't want her working with some guy I couldn't trust. He'd never go after somebody I liked, and he's totally crazy about Elizabeth. Yeah, and Kingsley's gay. It's perfect. The three of them can work on this vampire business together, and then she'll be really happy here. They walked past the secretary for the Auror department, a plump, middle-aged witch in pink robes and a crooked green velvet hat, who smiled coyly at Neville and waved him past. Lupin looked quite pleased when Neville walked through the door and jumped up enthusiastically to greet him.
Thank God you're here, he told him without preamble. Was worried about you. Had to go with some mongos, and...
He stopped talking when he saw Cosmina trailing behind.
Miss Dragomir,
he announced politely and gave her a bow.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you,
Cosmina replied in a small voice.
I'm showing Cosmina the ministry, Neville announced loudly, and introducing her to people. You know, so she'll make friends here.
Well, that was about as subtle as a large brick, Lupin thought to himself. Damn, he's pretty pissed. Suppose I'll have to give it a go. All right, be friendly.
Be friendly! Shit, I can't do it.
Neville glared at him ferociously. Okay, I gotta do it.
Oh, I know. I'll channel Sirius. He could chat up any woman. That's it.
Help me out here, Padfoot.
Well, that's very good of you,
he told Neville and gave Cosmina a disarming smile.
I can't imagine you have any difficulty meeting people, though. Perhaps keeping them away.
Cosmina blushed prettily at this, and Neville gave him an irritated look.
Okay, maybe not serious.
Thank you,
Cosmina said happily.
I was hoping we could get to know one another better, since we will be working closely together.
She gave him a hopeful look.
Well, that would be outstanding,
he replied with a lascivious smile and cocked an eyebrow.
I can't think of anything I'd like better, actually.
Oh, thank you,
she gushed ecstatically. Now Neville was glaring at him furiously. Damn it, Padfoot, clear off, will you? I take back that channeling bit. Go, go!
See? You've nothing to worry about, Neville told Cosmina at the top of his voice. We better get going. Maybe while you're gone this afternoon, I'll stop by and check in on Elizabeth, he added pointedly to Lupin, so she'll know what you're up to.
Holy shit, will he
fucking shit. He's going to tell Elizabeth I'm after his girlfriend. She's not going to speak to me for 3 weeks.
All right, can I talk to you for a minute?
He asked Neville quickly.
It's about my godson. He's his professor,
he added to Cosmina.
Although I'd hate to keep such a beautiful woman waiting.
He gave her a smoldering look, and a long piece of blonde hair fell across his eyes, and Cosmina let out a little sigh. Fuck off, Sirius! Get the hell out of here! A short, barking laugh reverberated through Lupin's head.
You invited me, Mooney, and I'm not going. I'm bored.
No! Neville yelled heatedly. You can't talk to me. We're leaving, so we can finish the tour and stop by and check on Elizabeth, he snarled threateningly. Holy fucking mother of Jesus! Who knows what the fuck I'll tell her? I'm not gonna get any for a month!
Remember when you thought Trevor was dead, and when I stood at state for you, and the passwords, and your graduation, and when you had trouble with the Slytherins, that greenhouse I put up for you, and when I jumped in front of Malfoy to save you and Harry?
Lupin burst out frantically. Neville appeared singularly unimpressed.
I'm the only one who ever remembers your birthday, Lupin shouted wildly. Since you were 13 years old, and I haven't missed a single one. Even Harry forgets, and he's got the same damn birthday.
The secretary stuck her head in the door.
Is everything all right, Remus?
She asked inquisitively.
No,
Lupin blurted out desperately.
Call up the MLE, quick. Don't let Neville get out of this department.
Ha ha, Neville replied scornfully. See if they can stop me. Come on, Cosmina.
Remus, help, help, somebody's trying to kill me.
Someone's after Rosie,
Lupin yelled suddenly and disapparated with a bang.
Who's that?
Cosmina demanded with a frown.
And why is he upset with you? You should not shout back at him. He outranks you, and...
She glared furiously around the empty room, since Neville had already disappeared. Neville arrived into the middle of the empty great room just as Lupin turned and made a mad dash for the kitchen, and he impatiently sprinted off behind him, yelling for his sword. Once inside the kitchen, Lupin put his finger to his lips and pointed silently with his wand towards a small door at the back of the room, and Neville nodded quickly. What if a Death Eater's got her? She might be hurt. She might be scared. She might... Lupin sprang noiselessly to the left of the door with his wand outstretched at shoulder height, and Neville flattened himself against the right with his wand pointed a few feet below, the two of them effectively blocking the exit of anyone either walking upright or trying to escape by crawling.
Help!
Rosie suddenly screamed from within.
He's gonna kill me!
Neville swung around and kicked the door in. Lupin yelled, Lumos! And leapt into the pantry, and Lucretia began wailing loudly for Jesus. The light illuminated a multitude of dark red jam, which Neville at first thought was blood, that covered the floor, Rosie's face and arms, and the entire body of a person with a bag over his head and his arms around Rosie's neck. Neville charged in after Lupin, slid on the floor, skidded straight into Lucretia, and when the combined weight hit the back of the shelves, the whole wall caved in. Lupin slid on the jam as well and flipped in a somersault fashion right up into the air, but pointed his wand at the attacker's head on the way down.
Avada Kedavra! No!
Rosie yelled and dropped to the floor, yanking Kenny along with her. The killing curse hit the side of the pantry, and jars of mustard, pickles, ketchup, marmalade, and beets exploded everywhere, and the entire ceiling collapsed. Rosie! Lupin and Neville shouted together.
It's okay, it's just Kenny! Rosie squealed. I can't see!
I got beets and ketchup all over myself, Lucretia shrieked, and I'm trapped under this ceiling, and I might already be dead!
Neville, who was covered in pickles, crawled out from under the debris and pulled the slimy food-covered Lucretia to her feet. Kenny staggered up from beneath a pile of drywall, irritably yanking the flour sack off his head, and Rosie clambered to her feet, spluttering and shaking her hair, which was coated with mustard.
Well, Lupin told Rosie pleasantly, I'm sure you'd make a stunning blonde. Perhaps not that shade of yellow, though.
He glanced back at Neville, who was angrily flinging pickles from his hair and eyes.
And what's your opinion, Professor Pickle?
Yes, Neville, cheerfully. Lupin had jumped out of the pantry before the ceiling fell in and didn't have a speck of food on him, and Neville irritably snatched up some beets and flung them in his direction.
Missed me,
Lupin smirked as he darted to the side.
What are you all doing in that pantry? Or do I want to know?
He was the only one who appeared amused by the situation.
Damn, dude! Kenny shrieked angrily. First you steal my dick, man, and then you go Avada Kedavra on my ass, dude! You are not very polite, man.
Sod off, Lupin told him insolently. You almost got me sent to Azkaban. Why did you have that sack on your head? And why were you grabbing Rosie's neck?
He said he was going to kill me if I summoned you, Rosie wailed. And I had to summon you because...
We was locked up, Lucretia bawled out. Locked in the pantry.
Neville and Lupin exchanged incredulous looks, and Lupin shook his head and smiled.
"What the hell is wrong with these muggles?" Neville shouted.
"I've no idea,"
Lupin replied amiably.
"Apparently, they're idiots."
Kenny, Lucretia, and Rosie all began screaming at them at once.
"Look!" Lupin held up his hand for a moment. "You don't summon someone unless your life is actually in danger.
Or because you can't get out of a bloody pantry."
He broke off and started laughing.
"There's a latch right here, inside the door."
He grinned, and Rosie and Lucretia flushed and looked guiltily at the floor.
"Man, you almost killed me, dude,"
Kenny said sulkily.
"Two more letters, man. I'd be a dead motherfucker without a dick, dude. You suck."
"I wish he had killed you,"
Rosie wailed. "You're the one that got us into all this trouble."
She promptly burst into tears, and Lupin looked alarmed.
"It's fine," he said quickly. "It is. I'm sure you were frightened and you just overreacted," he added kindly. "Anyway, there's no harm done."
"What?" Neville screamed. "What? All she has to do is start that bawling and everything's okay. You scared us to death. We thought somebody was killing you. We thought you were hurt."
"You leave Miss Rosie alone," Lucretia hollered. "She was scared. You ain't never been locked in no closet before, with Kitty. I say that is an emergency. Yes, I does."
"This is just how they are,"
Lupin shrugged apologetically to Neville.
"You got to get used to them. Anyway, I think they're kind of funny."
"Nobody can stand being locked in no closet with Kenny. You should have heard what Kenny said about you,"
Lucretia told Lupin smugly.
"He say his dick bigger than you did. Yeah, he did. I say you blow him up right now," she added hopefully.
"Well, I wouldn't know if it is or not," Lupin replied politely. "I can't say as I looked at it. I just sent it to—"
All of the color drained out of his face at once, and he staggered backwards a step.
"Shit,"
he gasped out.
"Oh, fuck.
You remember, man,"
Kenny screamed jubilantly.
"I love you, man. Bring it back, dude. Bring it back."
"Neville,"
Lupin shouted desperately.
"What?"
Neville yelled back.
McGonagall, when's she coming back?"
This afternoon, I think," Neville replied with a frown. "What? Oh, you're a dead man," he added knowingly.
"Let's go,"
Lupin hollered frenetically.
"Don't start running around," Neville told Lupin authoritatively when they appeared outside the gates. "It looks suspicious. Got to just walk in the castle like I'm here because, well, I live here, and like you're visiting me, right?"
Lupin nodded fervently.
"Look, I didn't mean any of that with Cosmina,"
he said quickly as they walked rapidly across the grounds.
"I was trying to be polite to her, but I couldn't, so I thought I'd channel Sirius, and then that fucker wouldn't go away."
For a moment, Neville appeared to have no idea what he was talking about.
"What? Oh, that. Don't worry about it. You better be careful when you try to channel people," he told him knowingly. "They don't always go away when you want them to. I channeled my grandfather once when I was 8. I kept hobbling around farting all the time and saying stuff like, 'Hoity-toity today, aren't we?' to Gran, and she shut me up in that vampire butler's coffin."
When they entered the castle, they raced towards the gargoyle with several interested groups of students trailing behind, and Filch ineffectually screaming at them to slow down.
"Cobble's chicken soup!"
Lupin shouted at the gargoyle, and they took off up the stairs, 3 at a time.
"What's that?" Neville hollered as they burst inside the office.
"Some muggle thing Albus put in his ice cream. It was disgusting."
Lupin raced over to McGonagall's desk and immediately began yelling at it, and Neville tripped over one of her cats and sprawled out onto the carpet.
"Damn, damn, damn," Lupin muttered. "Desk password, let me think. Levitating turds, no, that's the trunk. Blubbering midgets, no, that's the closet. Albus!"
Dumbledore came scurrying into his portrait, looking, as he always did, as if he had just happened upon an especially pleasant surprise.
"Whatever is the matter, Remus?" he said mildly and adjusted his glasses. "Goodness, you seem distraught. Have a jelly bean. Ah, Neville, good to see you."
Both of them ignored these greetings.
"What's the password to the desk?"
Lupin said frantically.
"And what did you put into her desk, Remus?" Dumbledore asked him sternly. "One would think you might grow out of these things."
He chuckled to himself.
"You don't want to know," Neville responded quickly. "Please, tell us the password, please. She's going to be really mad. She'll kill him," he added direly.
Meanwhile, all of the other headmasters had stepped back into their portraits with expressions of interest on their faces.
"What's the password?"
Lupin yelled wildly at Dumbledore, who was now perusing a candy cane he held up in his hand.
"Huh?" he replied without looking up. "What's that?"
"Severus!" Lupin shouted violently. "What's the bloody password to this sodding desk?"
Snape appeared positively delighted to see him.
"Hmm," he replied thoughtfully and stroked his chin. "I cannot say as I remember, Lupin."
Yes, yes you do, Lupin said desperately. I know you do. Please, what is it?
Apologize for torching up my bag,
Snape replied haughtily.
I'm sorry I torched up your bag,
Lupin answered immediately.
Apologize for dressing up Longbottom's boggart of me in his grandmother's clothes.
I'm sorry I made the boggart wear your clothes.
Apologize for throwing Mrs. Norris onto my head while I was sleeping.
I'm sorry I threw Mrs. Norris onto your head.
What? Neville said gleefully. You threw Mrs. Norris onto his head? Brilliant!
Shh!
Lupin hissed furiously.
Apologize to me for...
Now, Severus, Dumbledore told him sternly. This could go on all day, and I don't believe you ever apologized to Remus for telling all the Slytherins he was a werewolf.
No,
Lupin said nastily.
I don't believe he did.
I am not the one wanting the password,
Snape drawled out disdainfully and glanced backwards with a frown.
You can't kill me, Sirius, he said in a disgusted voice. I'm already dead. Have you forgotten?
Look, Neville whispered in a terrified voice as he peered out the window. She's walking across the lawn. Here she comes! All of the headmasters disappeared from their portraits at once.
Get the sword!
Lupin hissed at Neville and turned his back to the desk.
Abrilo! Alpuerta! Abrilo! Sarcophagus!
Sarcophagus? Neville said skeptically.
Well, have you got any ideas? Parapet! Cornish hens! Voldemort!
Apparently, Lupin was becoming rather desperate. Neville mumbled. I don't think we're meant to use the sword of Godric Gryffindor to get some muggle's dick out of a drawer.
Get the sword! Lupin shouted recklessly. She's almost the front door!
I get Gryffindor's sword! Neville yelled, and the sword crashed through the glass cabinet and zoomed into his hands. Well, now what am I supposed to do?
I don't know. Think! Think!
Neville pointed the sword at the desk. The sword of Godric Gryffindor commands you to open, he proclaimed melodramatically, but the desk was apparently either unimpressed or had been made by a Ravenclaw. They both froze at the distinct clicking sounds of McGonagall's heels on the staircase.
Hide!
Lupin hissed desperately.
Hide!
He disappeared noiselessly behind a curtain, and Neville jumped to the side of the broken glass cabinet.
Who has broken into this cabinet?
McGonagall shrilled angrily as she pushed through the door and dropped her carpet bag onto the floor.
Why is the Gryffindor sword out of its case? Albus! Albus!
Yes, Dumbledore responded meekly.
Who broke this cabinet and got the sword out? And how did these pickles get on my Persian carpet?
She shrieked, and from his hiding place behind the cabinet, Neville winced horribly.
Severus,
Dumbledore responded promptly and hurried out of his portrait.
I have never... Back from vacation, and what a start to the term! There's a cleaning spell in the world, and I know some marauder had something to do with this!
McGonagall shouted wrathfully into the air.
You mark my words. Either an original, honorary, or junior marauder!
Phineas Nigellus cleared his throat loudly.
What is it, Phineas?
Minerva snapped out irritably.
My... great-great-great-grandson,
Phineas announced importunately,
wishes to convey that the marauders are not to blame for everything that happens in the whole entire world. That is what he wishes to convey. You tell Sirius Black, she replied haughtily, to stick it in his ear.
Yes, ma'am, Phineas replied promptly.
He also wishes to convey that Remus Lupin is hiding behind your blue velvet curtain to the left.
Lupin strolled angrily into view.
Remus Lupin, McGonagall announced triumphantly. I knew it. Did I not just say? What in the world are you up to?
Right, Lupin said quickly. I thought I'd check your desk before you opened it, in case something dangerous was in it. Someone might have planted something in there.
McGonagall looked totally disgusted at this.
I am not afraid of my own desk, she said stridently and pulled out a key. And why were you hiding?
Severus kept insulting me. I knew if I kept looking at him, I'd slash his portrait with that sword.
There's nothing in here but my quill pens and my...
McGonagall said as she unlocked and pulled open the desk drawer.
Don't!
Lupin yelled ineffectually. A thin, cylindrical, flesh-colored object suddenly flew out of her hands onto the pickle-stained rug.
What on earth is that?
She shrieked.
Nothing,
Lupin said quickly, and with a horrible grimace, picked it up and stuffed it in his pocket.
Nothing,
McGonagall looked suddenly as if she might be sick.
I know what that is, she said and sat down with a nauseated expression. Oh, please tell me it's not Professor Slughorns. He disappeared one day, you know, strangely enough, while you were a student here. And why did you get out the sword?
McGonagall demanded.
I thought I could use it to get in your desk, Lupin replied truthfully, and sat down on a chair with a pathetic look.
I just didn't want you to see it, Minerva, he sighed disconsolately. I'm awfully sorry. It is Slughorn's. I knew there was an enchantment on it, and I knew that it was meant to appear in the headmaster's desk shortly after the first day of term 2009. And just who did this enchantment?
McGonagall replied severely.
Sirius,
Lupin said with a face so innocent, even Neville was impressed.
I tried to talk him out of it. You know they never listened to me, even though I was a prefect,
he added self-righteously. Neville was quite sure he could hear someone shouting from behind Phineas Nigellus.
I am not surprised, McGonagall announced haughtily. That boy was the worst of the lot. The worst, and it certainly wasn't your fault he wouldn't behave. Thank you for coming to get that thing.
You're welcome, Lupin replied solemnly. I don't mind at all.
My great-great-great-grandson has a message for Remus Lupin,
Phineas Nigellus announced pompously.
Remus Lupin doesn't want it,
he replied immediately. No, Remus certainly does not, Minerva snapped. Your great-great-great-grandson does not have his own portrait. Quit carrying message for him, Phineas.
Phineas disappeared from view.
Well, I've got to get off to Romania then, Lupin said sadly. Wish I could stay and catch up.
From beside the cabinet, Neville had started smiling to himself. I can't believe it. How does he get away with this stuff? And he stopped smiling. How am I going to get out from behind this cabinet? He sucks.
Now, you be careful, Remus. I mean it,
McGonagall said sternly.
Yes, ma'am,
Lupin replied and jumped to his feet. Beside the cabinet, Neville glowered ferociously at him. Just go on, then. Leave me stuck here behind this cabinet. You're always getting me into trouble. I hate you.
Oh, one more thing, McGonagall pursed her lips, and Lupin froze in the doorway. Professor Vetra has decided to retire. I've got to choose a new head of house for Gryffindor. I was thinking of Professor Binns. He was a Gryffindor, you know.
Professor Binns is a dead Gryffindor, Lupin said disgustedly. Can't you pick someone who's actually alive? Anyway, the answer's obvious. Who represents Gryffindor better than Neville?
Neville held his breath.
Well, he's awfully young, he heard McGonagall reply grudgingly.
He was 8 years younger when he killed Nagini,
Lupin responded determinedly.
And he's an order member. There's no better Gryffindor I know.
I suppose you're right, McGonagall said finally. Albus always trusted your judgment on this sort of thing. I'll ask him today,
she finished decisively.
Excellent, Lupin beamed. This is excellent. Alice will be awfully proud.
Neville started sniffling. This is great. I don't believe it. I'm going to be the head of house for Gryffindor. This is so great. I love him.
Now, McGonagall added severely, I want the truth.
The truth?
Lupin replied in a strangled voice.
Oh, yes, Remus Lupin, she said ominously. Unless you are prepared to give me your word that that entire pack of nonsense was the truth. Your word of honor, Remus.
I can't do that,
he blurted out desperately. Neville closed his eyes in horror. Oh, this is bad. This is really, really bad. He was rather startled when he heard a loud crack and found himself standing in front of the gates of the castle. What the... Oh, yeah, right. You can't apparate out of Hogwarts, but you can apparate somebody else. He sent me out of there. Thank God. He's caught out now, though, and it's not going to be pretty. I better go help him. For the second time in the past hour, he sprinted across the lawn. When Neville reached the gargoyle, he found the headmistress's door wide open, and Lupin standing with his back to the stairs, while a livid McGonagall jabbed at him with a long, bony finger. Lupin took a step backwards.
Watch out! Neville called up warningly. Getting too close to the stairs!
Apparently, Lupin did not hear this, however, due to the decibel level of McGonagall's shrieking.
Of all the things you have done in this school! She bellowed, and the stone gargoyle, three suits of armor, and the statue of Barnabas the Barmy, apparently lost again, and even the cackling Peeves all went rushing off pell-mell down the corridor. This is the worst! Remus John Lupin! The worst!
Ouch, Neville winced. She knows he hates that John bit.
Ha!
Filch slithered up and cackled gleefully in a manner reminiscent of Kenny.
"He's getting it now, he is. Got away bloody murder for years. So that Tarmar says, no good nasty, sneaky, bloodthirsty beast."
He splat a long stream of tobacco juice onto the polished floor. Neville whirled around angrily and lunged at him, but reluctantly pulled back when he saw 5 6-year Hufflepuff girls hurrying interestedly down the corridor. Filch gave him a triumphant and insolent look. "I guess he thinks I'm still scared to death of him," Neville thought hotly. "We'll see." "Don't you dare call him that, you bloody squib," he bent down and hissed in Filch's ear. "I'll chop your head off just like I did Nagini's and bury it in my garden. You shut up." Filch gave him an infuriated look and took off down the hall, muttering about the Carrows and when life had been worth living.
"Oh, look!"
one of the Hufflepuff girls squeaked delightedly as they rushed up next to Neville.
"Professor McGonagall's yelling at somebody out there! She's really mad!"
"Clear off," Neville told the group impatiently. "Go on, then." The Hufflepuffs, who were normally quite docile and easily intimidated, were so fascinated they paid no attention to him whatsoever.
"Don't you tell me you're sorry!"
McGonagall roared and shoved Lupin squarely in the chest. "Watch out!" Neville yelled wildly and leapt to the side, as the Hufflepuffs fell over one another into a massive pile of yellow robes, books, magazines, beribboned plates, perfume, and screams. Lupin crashed all the way down the staircase onto the marble floor, and McGonagall slammed the door shut.
"Oh, she's killed him!"
one of the girls wailed happily as they jumped up and swarmed around him.
"His head is bleeding!"
a tall blonde squealed delightedly.
"Oh, no, that is!" another sang out triumphantly. "That's that werewolf aura that destroyed Hawkmead with Professor Longbottom!"
Lupin sat up, looking dazed and rather disoriented.
"Can you believe Professor Longbottom would do that?"
a redhead with a protuberant nose whispered loudly.
"But I always thought that he was so boring!"
"He's not boring!" the girl next to her left hissed knowingly.
"He's crazy, that's what he is. Everybody knows it now. That's why he talks to that toad. It's not even really a toad. It's somebody that made him mad!"
Apparently they had no clue Professor Longbottom was standing right next to them. Lydia, whom Neville recognized as the female Hufflepuff prefect, pulled out a handkerchief and began dabbing at Lupin's forehead with a maternal expression of concern.
"He's hurt,"
she told the other girls authoritatively.
"He's cute,"
another one announced, and a great deal of high-pitched, nasally giggling ensued.
"Make them go away,"
Lupin moaned and put his head in his hands.
"My head's killing me. I can't take it."
"I said clear off!" Neville shouted at the girls. "Back to your dorm! 20 points for Hufflepuff!"
All the girls leapt to their feet and simultaneously burst into tears.
"I've never lost any points before!"
screeched one in a glass-shattering voice.
"My mom's going to be horribly upset! She'll take away my subscription to Teen Witch Weekly!"
another bawled loudly.
"I've broken a nail from sitting on that floor!"
screamed the redhead girl.
"Who knows a nail-fixing spell? Lindy, have you got spello tape?"
"Why is Professor Longbottom so mean now?" Lydia screeched.
"He's crazy and mean! He doesn't even care that his friends lying there dead!"
a tall blonde yelled angrily, and they all gave him mutinous looks.
50 points from Hufflepuff!"
Neville bellowed, and the girls let out one last final scream and blazed off down the hall. Neville crouched down worriedly next to Lupin, who was wiping blood from the gash on his forehead onto his sleeve and appeared to be unsure of his whereabouts.
"You're gonna have to get that fixed. But you go see Poppy."
"Okay,"
Lupin replied obediently. Neville started helping him to his feet and jumped, when an ominous black shadow fell across his shoulder, and he glanced up into the forbidding and furious visage of Dragomir.
"What is the matter here?"
he snarled at them threateningly. "Go away," Neville told him rudely.
"Dimitri,"
Lupin said in a pleased voice.
"Why are you here? Fix my head, will you?"
"That is not my name,"
Dragomir replied quickly and glanced up and down the hall.
"You have concussion."
"Well, I don't,"
Lupin replied sullenly.
"I know your name. Bloody fudge. Can't stand that fucker. Didn't pay me shite for that business."
He wiped more blood onto his sleeve and glared up at Dragomir.
"You fix my head before I bleed to death."
Dragomir snatched out his wand and tapped Lupin's forehead with more force than Neville thought was necessary.
"Episki," he said rapidly. "Now, be quiet,"
he growled ferociously and added a few more heated sentences in Romanian.
"Speak English, you great fanged fuck,"
Lupin told him crossly, and Neville stifled a laugh.
"You know what?"
He looked up at Neville.
"What?"
Neville replied in a satisfied voice.
"He is one gloomy-ass son of a bitch,"
Lupin nodded knowingly and gestured towards Dragomir.
"I know this. And he cheats at cards."
"I do not!" Dragomir shouted with an outraged expression. "It is you who attempts to cheat whenever it is just before full moon. And,
Neville broke in with a puzzled and irritated voice,
"and how's it Morville told me that you just met right before Christmas?"
He started that up,
Lupin replied self-righteously.
It's great fang fuck here. He walked up to me and said, I don't believe we've met, so I went along with it.
You are babbling, Dragomir said nastily. You have concussion.
No, I don't. My head's clearing up. Well, sort of,
Lupin replied impatiently. Dragomir gave Lupin a frightful look.
Quit glaring at me,
Lupin snapped.
You better leave me alone. I'm the badass vampire killer,
he added in a surly voice, and Neville snickered loudly.
And I know dark vampires I like better than you.
This is brilliant, Neville thought gleefully. Brilliant.
And I would rather die with a feral wolf than with you, Dragomir shouted back, although the two of you would eat the same thing. Raw meat!
Lupin staggered to his feet.
Least I wouldn't be drinking blood,
he hissed back. You would if it were a full moon, Dragomir bellowed, and you hadn't had your wolf's bane. All three of them went for their wands at once.
What is going on down there?
McGonagall shrieked from the top of the stairs.
Well? Well?
Nothing,
Lupin replied solemnly.
There is no problem,
Dragomir sniffed haughtily.
Yeah, sorry, Neville called back up.
You will not speak of this to anyone,
Dragomir hissed furiously to Neville.
You are an Order member, and therefore I am trusting you,
he replied in an extremely malevolent voice.
Thanks, Neville replied sarcastically. Really, thanks. I'm honored.
Dragomir stormed off down the corridor shouting something in Romanian. Neville decided he was glad he didn't understand.
What's up with all that? Neville demanded as he pulled Lupin to his feet. What doesn't he want it known if he's your friend or something?
I don't know, Lupin replied morosely. He's probably embarrassed. 105-year-old woman just threw me down a flight of stairs. I put a muggle's dick in somebody's desk drawer. I like roaming around at night talking to giant spiders. I pretended to be your boyfriend. I thought Voldemort might be a password to Dumbledore's desk drawer, and I'm a damned werewolf. I don't know why I have any friends at all, he finished unhappily.
Well, now stop that, Neville said sternly. You do have a concussion or something. You're acting like a little kid. Why didn't you tell me he knew him?
Security. He's on the run,
Lupin said knowingly.
I think he's being paranoid, though. Nobody's going to chase him all the way to England. Anyway, I need to go.
On the run from what?
Neville frowned, but Lupin was occupied with summoning himself two aspirin and a cup of coffee, and ignored this.
You better not go anywhere. You're kind of confused. You might get splinched.
I've never gotten splinched,
Lupin replied haughtily.
Well, except for that time I pushed John into the cellar. He splinched me into 12 different pieces,
he added angrily,
and put me in 12 different rooms. You think that wasn't weird?
He shuddered.
It was horrible.
I can't believe you'd throw your old great-great-grandfather into a cellar,
Neville said heatedly.
It was horrible. What's wrong with you?
You never had to live with him,
Lupin replied solemnly.
You'd have done it too. Anyway, I was only 8, and he was twice my size, and just 110 or something. He wasn't so old. My parents went off to see some old yeti about a werewolf cure, and they left me alone with him for 3 days. He'd been shouting at me for 3 damn days. We're talking thousands of adjectives here.
Neville considered this for a moment.
Yeah, he said finally. Yeah, I don't blame you.
I'm not confused. Ask me something,
Lupin said defiantly.
What did we conjure up on Nocturne Alley?
Venomous yews.
What did Kingsley do to us?
Nothing, Felix Felicis effect. That, and he likes me best.
That's too easy, Neville thought for a moment. What did you enchant that mermaid in the prefect's bathroom to do when you were 5th year?
Who told you that?
Lupin yelled. Ha, George, and you know who told him.
Bloody Sirius, he replied angrily. He's been pissing me off all day. My great-great-grandson would also like to convey that Remus Lupin is hiding behind that blue curtain to the left,
he added in a mocking voice.
Suck my dick, you sodding asshole!
He shouted into the air. Stop that, Neville yelled. You're shouting at a dead guy.
And what you're saying is totally disgusting, he added irritably.
It's him. I told you he wouldn't go away. You used to say shit like that all the time.
Neville sighed. Did you get Kenny's dick?
Well, I think so,
Lupin frowned.
I can't remember what I did with it.
You're as bad as me, Neville said angrily. This is the second time you've lost a stupid dick.
Lupin ignored this.
I've got to go. I'm 10 minutes late, and I don't want to hear all of his haughty comments. He's rude as hell.
Who?
The person I'm going to see. And quit frowning, I'm fine.
Neville was not the slightest bit reassured when Lupin yelled out,
Castle Dracula, foot of Carpathian Alps, Transylvania.
and disappeared. When Neville returned home from the ministry, he stomped despondently up the porch steps, and Trevor, who was sitting on the doormat, hopped onto his arm to greet him. "Hey," he told him gloomily as he went into the kitchen to pour himself some tea, and launched into a litany of lamentation while Trevor looked on sympathetically.
"And I still don't know how he knows Dragomir. And why doesn't he like Cosmina?"
Neville told Trevor irritably.
"Honestly, what'd she ever do to him? Why does he have to channel Sirius to be nice to her? This day sucks. First Shagabold almost kills me, then he breaks my back, then I have to go to some mongos with him."
He paused, and Trevor gave him an encouraging croak.
"Well, I guess that part wasn't so bad," he said grudgingly. "It's not after they gave me the pain potion, anyway. Hey, I'm going to be head of Gryffindor House!"
He had completely forgotten about this. Trevor made a great leap and shrilled out an excited ribbit.
"Yeah, how brilliant is that? Harry and Ron are going to shit a brick. They are. You know, though..."
The mention of Harry and Ron's names had given him a strangely disconcerting sensation.
"Oh, no!" he shouted suddenly. "What did I have to tell Shagabolt all that? They're going to kill me! I'm going to die!"
he told Trevor melodramatically.
"I mean, unless Kingsley forgets or something. Yeah, he could forget, don't you think?"
Trevor stared back at him sadly, and Neville jumped furiously to his feet.
"Well, thanks a whole lot. You could at least pretend he might forget. It's not like he sees them all the time. We're not even having an order meeting until..."
Trevor gave him a smug look.
"Tonight," he intoned in a voice of direst gloom. "We've got a meeting tonight. Holy crap. And quit looking at me all puffed up like that," he added heatedly. "You're the worst toad anybody ever had."
Trevor left angrily off the table and hopped away down the hall.
"Well, go on then," Neville hollered after him. "We didn't mean it. We'll just hop off down the hall when I'm really upset. Don't worry yourself about me."
There was a reproachful croak from the back room, which apparently indicated Trevor was not planning on worrying himself about Neville. Alice came out of her bedroom with a puzzled expression on her face.
"I'm going to die," Neville announced to his mother without preamble. "This is the last time you'll see me alive."
She started smiling.
"I'm not joking," Neville hollered. "You'll see. You'll see when I come back in 10 different pieces, he added crossly. "And I'm writing Gringotts right now," he bellowed down the hall, apparently for Trevor's benefit. "And change if he will. You're not getting anything. Nothing. I'm going to leave it to Gran."
There was a knock on the cottage door, and Neville groaned.
"Yeah, this is going to be something good for sure," he moaned to Alice, who rolled her eyes in surprise. "This day sucks."
Neville opened the door to find Dragomir fixing him with his icy and disapproving stare.
"Professor McGonagall informs me you will be the new head of house for Gryffindor," he announced disgustedly. "I would like to speak with you about 3 of your students.
Neville stepped aside impatiently, and Dragomir strode past him, his black cloak swishing around his heels.
"You should talk to Remus," Neville replied nastily as they sat down on opposite couches and glowered at one another. "Since he's Tim's godfather and you two know each other."
"Did I say which students I was referring to?" Dragomir replied haughtily.
"You don't need to," Neville responded glumly.
Dragomir appeared startled when Alice came in with some tea and crumpets on a tray, and jumped to his feet with a courteous bow.
"I do not believe we have met," he said very politely. "Claudio Dragomir, it is an honor, Mrs. Longbottom."
Alice blushed, and Neville noticed her shiny dark brown curls, pulled back in a bun 5 minutes ago, were now trailing down her back.
"Oh no, oh no, oh no!"
"I was quite concerned," Dragomir told Neville gravely as he sat himself back down, "about Timothy Black. He was nearly killed by the cursed shirt. I simply wish to inform you of my concern."
Neville stared at him incredulously, and Alice sat down beside Neville and smiled approvingly at Dragomir.
"Your concern?" Neville spluttered out.
"Yes," he replied solemnly. "I also wish to convey my congratulations on your new position as head of Gryffindor House. It is a great honor."
Alice beamed and clapped her hands like a schoolgirl, and Dragomir stared at her as if he were a smitten third year.
"Well, I will not intrude any longer upon your hospitality," Dragomir said courteously. "It is my pleasure to meet you, Mrs. Longbottom. Hagrid, I am told, looks out for your mother while you are away," he added blandly to Neville.
"Well, yeah," Neville replied disgustedly. "He's not drunk. He's no help at all, really.
You let me know," Dragomir told him severely.
You will not need to worry about your mother when you are gone. I will watch your cottage.
Alice smiled happily at him. Whatever happened to you being so shy? Neville thought furiously. Trevor hopped up on his arm and looked Neville right in the eye and shot him a crystal clear nonverbal message. Maybe Dragomir will be your new daddy.
I'm not going to die at the order meeting tonight, Neville yelled out suddenly and leapt to his feet. Because I'm going to go kill myself right now.
He stormed out of the room and Alice gave Dragomir an apologetic look.
Your son is an odd fellow, he told her pleasantly. Highly intelligent, certainly brave, but a strange fellow.
A loud clanging noise that sounded suspiciously like a sword being thrown against the wall came from Neville's bedroom, followed by a torrent of shouting at Trevor.
Perhaps he's not having a good day, Dragomir said politely.